All right, Brent, we're back. All we wanted for Christmas was a good college football game, and we finally got one. And
just not the one you expected.
It's not the one I expected. So let's start there. Rose Bowl still going on right now, but it's a firm shovel to the face. I mean, this game is absolutely over. Oregon, by far the most dominant team in college football during the regular season. Ohio State has taken that mantle and ran with it after demolishing Tennessee and demolishing Oregon in the Rose Bowl. I mean, that was just you talk about a transition of a team and going from conservative to aggressive and understanding who they are really, really quickly. Ohio State did it. And poor Oregon, man, great season. This is why we extended the playoffs. This is why we did this, so you could get teams in the mix that could find themselves, that could get hot. We've talked about that. Now, Ohio State lost late to Michigan, but had several weeks to sit and wait and stew, and they came out, and my goodness, man, the Ducks got cooked.
That's a good line. I asked before the playoff if there was a QB that could go on the Joe Flacco-esque run, and it's Will Howard right now. And it helps when you have the biggest superhuman
freakazoid
probably in the game. I mean, now granted, next week's going to be a great matchup, next week's going to be a great matchup for them against Texas. But that Jeremiah Smith he's the number one pick in the draft. If he declared, he's that
like good. Right now,
like
right now is an 18-year-old. Yeah, and kudos to them, by the way, for. Like, here's the thing. We talked about this, Brent, in the preview show. When you watched Ohio State, they kept him at the X position. Just called the X position. They kept him out wide. They did not move him around. You saw the benefits against Tennessee. You're seeing the benefits against Oregon, right? That double move against – what do you get? You get your guy lined up against the safety. That guy running full speed at a safety is a mismatch. That guy in a jump ball situation is a mismatch. Jeremiah Smith, he had 118 in the first quarter. Like I wrote down Will Howard in his start. You talk about Will Howard. He had 212 passing in the first quarter. Jeremiah Smith had 118 yards. Like Ohio State has freaky wide receiver after freaky wide receiver, and we keep going like that. You can't get better than him. You can't get better than him. Now, like the new benchmark is Jeremiah Smith because I told you we talked about this a little bit, Brent, before the season. I had him as one of the surprise players of the year because. I talked to a guy that recruited him and said, Julio Jones and AJ Green. And I said, what does that mean? They're like, that's the only two guys I could compare him to coming out of high school. Like, he's that kind of good. And, I mean, my gosh, like, he has proved it. Ohio State has figured out exactly who they are. Yeah. They're not going to try to pound you up front. They're gonna pull. They're going to misdirection. They're going to spit it on the perimeter. By the way, great job bringing Jeremiah Smith across the formation, you know, getting him the football in space. Great job getting their playmakers, creating space. And Ohio State, man, clearly the favorite. I don't know how much they're going to be favored against in their next ball games. It's going to be a lot. Like, they're going to be the favorite the rest of the way. It's not even close. They just took apart the best team in college football all season.
And you know, we said this at the beginning of the season, they had the best roster likely top to bottom in terms of number, all the guys that came back, the number of pro players they have, it's the best roster. And now that you have 12, by the way, because they wouldn't have been in a four teamer, you get to reset. And I think
that's awesome. Like everybody wanted different teams, not Ohio State, Georgia, and Bama. And because you did the 12 team, you got Ohio State in and they got a chance to win it.
But the element that you brought up, I think, is one of the big elements that you're seeing when you have talent discrepancies. It's the time element. And when you give the more talented team more time to prepare and more time to rest, guess what they do? They play better. And you're not seeing the ebbs and flows or the randomness that maybe you see in the regular season. Now that they have all this
and not
time,
everything's created equally, right? Like some people had harder games the week before. Oh, yeah. Some people had easier games the week before. So now it's a level playing field. But interesting to your point, Brent, like the teams that had byes are off to a horrible start.
Yes. Like Ofer.
Now, Ofer. Now, all of them.
Two of those were double-digit underdogs.
Yeah, two of them double-digit underdogs, but obviously Ohio or Oregon was an underdog. But so far, if this is an indicator for spinning it forward to Georgia, like that's an interesting thing. The rust and the time off that it takes. But you know, interesting. Ohio State's defense has been great all year long. Like they didn't lose mm-hmm. the Michigan game because of their defense. Their defense is so great. Senior laden, experience laden. They're doing a better job of protecting their back end. If you watch that football game, cornerbacks bailing like crazy, staying on top of routes. Great job by them. Less man to man, more exotic. Like just they've been a great defense all year, and they have so many answers to the question. And it's pretty simple. When 44 and 33 rush the passer like that, which they didn't in the first Oregon game. Zero sacks in the first Oregon game, but pressure on the quarterback with them winning, you know, making disruptive plays, making it hard with that back end. Caleb Downs, we talk about him a lot, just an eraser. I mean, but they've got so many experienced, really, really good players. And that's why.
And Evan Stewart for Oregon. Like Holly Rowe mentioned it. Like he got dinged up in warmups. I mean, he had his uniform on and just didn't play. Like that guy was a difference maker for their offense. You combine no him and no running game.
So, well, and James got hurt. James got dinged at the running back spot. Yeah. So either way, I don't think Oregon could have brought back Marcus Mariota and whoever, Michael James and whoever they wanted to. They got their arse kicked. Ohio State just shut everybody up. Everybody that had any doubts, they're the best team in the sport right now. It's not even close. They're on a heater. They're doing it against playoff teams now too, which is crazy. Obviously, the Georgia news hit today too, Brent. Just the,
tragedy.
The tragedy of that, and then football becomes a secondary thing. And so, you know, we wouldn't even be doing this because we'd be watching the Georgia game and getting ready for it. And a lot of people's lives affected, and that's never fun. Never fun to talk about. And never fun to deal with. Like there's a lot of families that are dealing with a lot worse than what Georgia and Notre Dame are dealing with, but they do have to deal with the facts of the game being scheduled and every single bit of your routine, Brent. Like the day before is always the day before. The day of is the day of. Like all of those things that in the body clock that they've started and the way that they've prepared to have a game postponed to the next day. It's kind of strange. It's not really something that's done. A lot of new factors will come into place. Obviously, it's not the most important thing, but we don't talk about, you know, the other stuff here as much as we talk about football. And obviously, more time to change the schedule and do some things a little bit differently than they were planning on doing.
Yeah, and it's, you know, obviously the thoughts and prayers to everyone infected, all that New Orleans, all that stuff. That a lot of those, it goes without saying, but you need to at least say it. But it's a different animal now. And now you got a midday versus you were preparing for a late. You've got Georgia went and did a little walkthrough. I haven't seen anything in terms of Notre Dame. So we'll be talking about that game tomorrow a little earlier. And we thought we were going to talk about it tonight. So it spin it forward in terms of either team, whoever wins is now at a 2-day disadvantage versus Penn State. So it's,
which is a big deal
all around.
All those coaches talk about that difference, but we won't talk about that game. We just wanted to mention that real quick, but
we'll be back tomorrow to talk about that game.
We'll wrap that up for sure. How about, okay, I'm just going to take you through my emotions, Brent, in the Texas Arizona State game. Okay. I thought this game could be close. I thought this one was going to be closer than Boise, Penn State. We talked about it. They let you in games. They'll commit penalties. They'll be sporadic offensively. Started that game, they ran two plays in the first quarter, or five plays in the first quarter, Texas, but had 14 points, firmly in control, scored on a punt return. I'm like, Texas is so much better than Arizona State. Like, so
Turn
much
it off.
Better.
Can we get to the next game, please?
Dude, all I want for Christmas is a good game. That line is still available. All I want for the new year is a good football game in the college football playoff. Then all of a sudden, there goes a stretch where I'm like, okay, I know Arizona State's losing on the scoreboard. But
they're kind of dominating the game.
Like, I kind of feel like they're very much in this game, maybe even the better team. Third quarter hits, or four, right before the fourth quarter and into the fourth quarter, I'm like, Texas, this is over. And then Arizona State goes 16 unanswered and ties the football game and has a chance to win it at the end. And it's just what a maddening up and down game, craziness. I think the biggest thing for Arizona State is proving they belonged. I mean, they another team again with rest, like Boise, like Arizona State, like Oregon, came out slow as crud. Like they came out slow and sluggish, and and Texas obviously jumped out to the lead, man. But what were you thinking?
Well, at first, I know I was writing down notes, and I'm thinking, okay, Leavitt to me is like Miller Moss in that Michigan game, USC's quarterback, when we were talking about how he's running for his life on literally every play and getting up and getting drilled and still making plays. And then, like you said, Ewers, by the way, on the third down, drops the dime on the sideline, and then they go right and score, and it's 24-8. And I thought that was it. Like, I thought, okay.
Yep.
Dunsky. And – no, Scataboo said, I'm going to yak, and then I'm going to come back and throw tutties.
Yeah, he yakked, by the way, after a helmet to helmet, and he kept shaking his head the rest of the game.
Which makes you wonder a little bit.
Yeah, but and I know what those playoff games mean, bro. Like, you ain't dragging me off the field. I mean, it's just, it's not going to happen. Impressive resilience, impressive by both sides, honestly. It was an impressive response by Texas, too, because when you got into overtime, they had a 4th and 12. Like, you kind of forget that. Like, Texas is down 4th and 12, got to have it. They run a double move. By the way, Sark orchestrates two great plays. That play back on 4th and 12 to get Golden, and then to get Helm on the little leak across the formation in OT, the second OT where you score in one play, get the two-point conversion, and then the ball game is over. But both teams throwing haymakers. I tell you what, dude, Arizona State ain't going nowhere. I'm just telling you. Arizona
not
State.
That QB, not with that coach. No.
That QB, dude, Sam Leavitt lost. But remember what he said before the game, Brent, and I brought it up, like, I'm going to go prove I'm better than yours. And he also made the play.
I thought he did. Yours made some great throws, but.
Hey, on 3rd and 13, he's the one who makes that scramble to get the first down, too, in overtime. Then I'm like, ball play. Like, but just, you're right, though. Quick twitch, athletic. You know, they're dinged up, obviously, without Tyson, and they got dinged up again at wide receiver. But, like, I was impressed with Scataboo. And I was impressed with Kenny Dillingham after the game and what he said, because they said, what were you saying to your players when you circled them up? And it's like a 22-second clip. Go on my Twitter if you want to see it. Yeah. Like, I said it. There's X's and O's, and that's the reason Kenny Dillingham is where he's at. But this is the reason why that they'll be back in the playoffs, and it's because he made them all circle back, and he made everybody shake hands. He was like, if we'd have won, we'd have shook hands. It's called sportsmanship. That's what we do. We do the right thing. Dude's 34 years old. Like, 34 years old. So – I could barely leave my family at 34, much less men that he's having to do with all the things that they're having to do. So I think we'll hear more from Arizona State with that QB, with that coach in that conference. Super impressed, but we also got to brag on Texas, I think, too, and the way they handled their business and did what they needed to do.
Ewers is an enigma because he'll kind of float into – almost like is he even in the game space kind of for about a quarter and a half or two quarters? And then he'll make the best throw of the night and then makes the throw on fourth down as much of a coverage issue as it was a throw, but still gets the protection set, knows the blitz is coming, all out blitz, you know, they protect, makes the throw. And then the 2-point throw was a
on the run, throw was dirty.
On the 2-point play was a like, so it's, but okay, the inconsistencies of our offense, by the way.
Is it the inconsistencies that bother you, or is it the personality? Because I kind of wonder, like, because does that bother you at all? Because he's so flatliner, effortless, like never gets high, never gets low. Kind of like, does that
sense
does
of urgency doesn't seem to have it?
Does that bother you, or is it play?
Sometimes with the throwing, I think the lack of sort of sense of urgency with the throw, the laziness is the wrong word with it, but I don't know the right word for it, but it doesn't necessarily, that part doesn't bother me. It's the inaccuracies. Like, he'll go for a quarter and a half and he'll be overshooting balls. And then, you know, the deep ball will just be a float city
under throw fest
where you're trying to get PI on an underthrow. And then, by the way, the underthrow cost him, but with the interception late that gave Arizona State the chance to come back and tie it. And then obviously, by the way, we one thing we got to talk about with this game is something I asked you, what was your New Year's resolution? Then you mentioned targeting, and then there was,
you're going to do it now, huh?
Yeah. I'm going to do it now. Because
the time we talked about.
I get that he didn't do this, but it was more like face, but it's the forcible contact to the head part of that. That was,
So the rules, like, and you're trying to, this is perfect because you're going to get me going. If you catch the ball, Brent, and you become a receiver or a runner, the rules change. That guy absolutely was not a runner. He was a defenseless player. So any forcible contact to the head or neck, it doesn't have to be the head. It doesn't have to be the crown of the head. How was that not forcible? Like, that's the definition of forcible. I don't know how he held onto the football, but the dude was about knocked out. He might have been. Like, look at that video. That is direct face-to-face, head snaps back. And that was a big play. Now, listen, Arizona State kickers, it would have been an invention.
You never know.
Regardless. And that there's no doubt it wouldn't have been a never. And let's talk about Arizona State in the mother flipping plus side of the field. Like, they sucked. They sucked bad. You want to talk about why you lost the game? It wasn't because of the targeting. It's because you sucked when you got on the other side of the field. You got inside the 25 five times, Brent. Five trips, and you got 6 points. Five trips inside Texas's 25, and you got 6 points. That's unbelievably bad. And you're a team that pounds the football, and you tried to give it to Scataboo, who was a man-child, an absolute man-child. By the way, it was why he was in my top three on my Heisman ballot. He was one of the top three for me. I can't tell you the order. But I know it. They couldn't pound away. And they couldn't get the short yardage situations. Listen, Texas has got all that beef inside, man. That's a tough squad to run inside on. But the targeting call, horse crap. It was targeting to me six ways to Sunday. I don't even know how you describe it. Bad call. But it's other things that you can point to that Arizona State lost. But they, again, still were super competitive.
Had the lead in overtime.
Yeah, had the lead.
Well, and I think if you sort of theme, when we look back to the totality of the playoff to this point that we've seen, the underdogs or road teams have had and put themselves in positions to make all of these games interesting and or win these games. It's that just can't make that play or that, you know, SMU missing the fourth down play early against Penn State. Indiana gets a great turnover, then turns it right back over, gives up a big long touchdown. Boise,
I can point to a bunch in Boise. If you're ready to go to Boise.
So many things in the Boise game. Like, we can talk about that.
Here's the thing, Brent. Here's the thing that's surprising to me. Like, if you told me Arizona State and Boise, because we'll get to them in a second. If you told me they made all these mistakes that I'm about to point out, like the five trip, I'd have told you they got curb stomped.
Yes.
Like, they'd have got absolutely boat raced. It would have been a zero contest. They'd have won by 20 or 30. Both games were really competitive. Both games were super competitive. Obviously, one more than the other, but Boise had his chance. A late touchdown that gets called back cuts that game to three.
Like, yes.
3 points to a penalty that meant nothing on the play. It was just a freak hands to the face thing it was a good call, but it was a freak hands to the face thing. But that's how close, man. That's how close I think college football is now. Like, it's not. Now, listen, Ohio State has changed that narrative for themselves, but everybody else, like, it's the mistakes. It's the teams that usually don't beat themselves, you know? Like, that's the
biggest
difference.
Games are lost more than they're won kind of thing.
And listen, Texas tried to beat themselves. Their best kicker in school history. You know, Auburn comes up small with two missed kicks.
Two misses.
So they had some opportunities, obviously, to win the football game earlier that they screwed up, that they could have done a better job on. But Boise State.
Did you see the Texas kicker trying to warm up and the Arizona State ball girls walk right in front of him? Right, was right before the last thing. There's a video out there. Like, you need to watch that. It's perfect for how it actually went. They weren't doing anything on purpose. It was not on purpose at all. But just given that he ended up missing it, it was kind of. But by the way, twice. Texas couldn't run the ball at all.
No
running game. No, and got 500 yards put on them. Like,
well, and the crazy part was they made some big plays that really helped them early, but then they disappeared. Then they made a few more when they needed to, but that's kind of surprising. Now, listen, Arizona State's been a good run defense all year. Their secondary is where you got to beat mm-hmm. them. I mean, they've been solid there, but Boise State, man, like they had a chance. They had a real chance. I left super impressed with the Maddox kid. Super impressed. Yes. Listen,
had late interceptions, but he was playing his tail off and keeping him in the game.
But in no way in the world is that supposed to be a competitive game when you lose the turnover battle 1-4. 1-4. Genty puts it on the turf twice. You got lucky to get one back. You know, it was a bad night for Boise State in a lot of ways, but they found themselves very much in it. Like they missed a field goal. They were all over the place. They were a little squirrely. They had a touchdown called back. They had penalties at wrong times. They did some things, I think, that were self-inflicted wounds that they could have done a lot better.
Very much. And I also think that
10 penalties too.
As much as that game was close, it was as to me close because Penn State, as much as it was close because of Boise, or it got to a point of that. Penn State, all they had to do was turn around and hand the ball off. If they just turn around and hand the ball off the entire game, they win by 30. They were not getting stopped. Outside was out. It was 8-9
outside
yards
run,
of carry.
Outside run.
Catron Allen was absolutely. And that we talked about the tackling issue. So many missed tackles for Boise in that game. And that's in the second half when they made it close, one of the linebackers came in and made a solo tackle. Made it 3rd and 5. Like, you had a chance. Like, you had multiple chances in that game. You just couldn't tackle at all.
And Penn State's play calling, too, was like,
I was just like, oh, my gosh, just hand the ball off.
I was telling Nicholas, I'm like, hey, bud, do you know why? Because my son's Nicholas, and he was watching the game with me. I said, do you know why they can't make those tackles? I said, they're not used to tackling those guys. Like, they're not used to tackling Warren. And you see, they fly in and take legs out, and a lot of times they didn't even wrap. You can do mm-hmm. that. Against certain competition, you can't do that against those guys. Like, you'll bounce absolutely right off them. There's two reasons why in the first half that was a game. It should have been over. It should have been a KO. The Penn State not and here's why. Okay, Penn State not wanting to run the football is one of them, Brent. But here's the thing. You offensive coordinator, so Brent used to be an offensive coordinator that called a bunch of plays. These guys want to show you what they can do. And they game plan all week, and they scheme all week. They're not going to line up and run the football. They're not going to do that. No one is going to line up and run the same play over and over and run the ball outside and have success. Like, you'll get yourself in a rhythm, but you got all these plays you done drawn up, and you want to use them.
And you practiced them, and you worked on them, and you've got a really quarterback. You've got 44 who's really good, like all these sort of things that you can do. Yeah, I get it. I totally get it.
So they got a little bit cute with play calling, but there mm-hmm. was one other thing that stopped two drives. They had two false starts. They had a holding. They had a face mask. Like, they got behind the sticks, and they're not a passing team that can get behind the sticks. That's not who they are. That's not what they are. They're a team that can use the run game and manufacture things. And obviously now you've seen Five starting to turn into a dude out wide. Like, I kept writing down Five. Yeah, Omar Evans, just deep ball speed, you could tell. But that's why the game stayed close. And another
Boise
thing,
fans,
too,
by the way, the Boise fans showed up and were loud and causing some, I think they caused a lot of the false starts.
Yeah, but here's another thing, too. You knew as a Penn State coordinator beyond a shadow of a doubt, you absolutely knew you had the advantage outside. You had Warren, you had Evans. So you knew those guys could win, and you try. So when you know that, Brent, I got to use it. I got to use those plays out wide. But I think they could have just pounded the mess out of them. And I thought Boise's fatal mistake that they deserved to lose was you cannot go man-to-man on Ty Warren in the red zone. What the heck are we doing? They went cover zero twice in the red. They covered him. He's 6'6". You can put your best guy on him if you want to. He makes plays. He makes catches. Two big, great touchdown throws from Aller. Up high where he can get it. There's guys draped on him, yes, but that's a catch that he's still going to make. Like, that's still his catch. Whether you like it or not, it's going to be his. And Ty Warren's an animal. And that offense, you know, they've really gotten humming with a deep ball down the stretch of the season and making more explosive, bigger plays. Aller's playing pretty good football.
It's one where you think about, okay, who can cover him moving forward? Maybe, you know, Malachi Starks for Georgia, Watts for Notre Dame, Caleb Downs. Like, yes,
Downs has already done it once.
Like, but he's still really, really good. I thought the funniest part of the broadcast, I don't know if you heard Lewis Riddick early in the second half, he's like, they can't help themselves. When we were talking about he called that perfectly. But one of the things that I was very shocked when Boise got the touchdown on the tight end leak play.
Oh, it was dirty. Lauder, yeah.
First time in the game. Like, what did we talk about in the pregame? How did they stay in the game against Oregon? Early down play action, creating consistent offense and moving the ball that way. It was the first time in that game that they went under center play action and they hit a touchdown. And it was like, where was this in the beginning? And I thought the other thing with Boise, from a scheme standpoint, they were bringing in their formations tight in that game.
So you bring all the bodies in tight when you do
and
that.
And you bring all the bodies when you do that, and you're not giving Jenty any level of space. And yes, he's the best north-south runner I think I've ever seen. But in some of the jump cuts he made in that game to get yards, like, he played phenomenally well for what the ability that he had, the room that he had. But when they gave him some level, like, hey, spread the run, third and 21, by the way, they gave it to him. He gets 26
on the draw.
Two other long third downs. They chuck it, get nothing when they could have gotten points. So there were some scheme things and some stuff where I was like, you're not helping yourself in this game, Boise. That's for sure.
Yeah. And I think, you know, their passing game early, they were attacking outside a little bit and took some of the easy stuff. And then it was almost like, we just did that to show we can do it to you. And then, but just not having a game breaker on the outside, you see the difference. Like, you see the Boise State receiver that you're throwing to versus some of these Ohio State guys, some of these Oregon guys that, like, when it's one-on-one, it's not a 50-50 ball. It's a 70-30 ball. Or Jeremiah Smith, it's a 90-10 ball. With some of Boise's guys out wide, that's a 40-60 ball against Penn State. And that's a big deal and a big difference. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say two things moving forward for Penn State. One, how serious is the Carter injury? Like,
that was a big deal.
Did he actually do something to where he's going to miss the next game or potentially the next two games? That's a big, big deal for them because the pass rush got a lot less emphatic after that. And then two is, like, pass pro, and the, like, Boise was bringing the house and getting home. Like, I don't know. So that to me is, as you move forward with the way Notre Dame plays, with the way Georgia plays, and can bring blitzes and also cover in a better sense than what Boise can and has the athletes to cover you, that might be an issue in the next game for Penn State. I don't know. I haven't read, so hopefully he's, for his sake, hopefully he's fine. But
first thing about Abdul Carter, he didn't play in the second half.
Right.
And they don't make freaks like that. Like 6'3", 250. Like, I know he wears 11, but he's a Micah Parsons type dude. Like, he's just got that kind of quickness, violentness. Moves like he's just not human. Like, superhuman, absolutely changes the game. to give props, I think, where props is due, though, I will say this. That daggum Vanover kid came in who was 6'4 and looked not like him.
15?
Yes. But he's a senior. I was like, dude, I've never seen that guy extended minutes because Carter plays so much. But, like, he played the speed option one time, played the quarterback and the pitch, and I was like, oh, my gosh, had a sack. Like, he actually had the first sack against, you know, Boise's left tackle. I was like, that's a dude. And then I think we also – like, obviously, Carter is the headliner and Carter is the dude. But Sutton is another guy that was on the ground with – and he hurt his groin earlier in the year, I think, before the Ohio State game. You could tell he was kind of tugging at it. Like, 33, 11, and 28, every time you watch the tape, is like, those guys are the dudes. Those guys that make this whole thing go. So if two of them are banged up moving forward, like, that's a huge freaking deal. Like, a huge deal. So, yeah, you're right. But – But I think the protection, Aller gets his eyes down. A lot of times they don't come back up. He doesn't have the best, you know, he's still, you can tell, developing the pocket presence. But he has definitely gotten better down the field. I mean, he's definitely making plays and open this offense up. And Penn
State's, some of the throws that weren't even caught were phenomenal throws.
Yeah.
From him. So
yeah.
Penn State's, hey, they're, and by the way, they're forced to be reckoned with as much as anything because of the path they had. Like, it is what it is. Their don't path, like, compared to what Oregon just had to do and play the most talented team potentially in the country, like,
Ohio State played, and, Ohio State played Oregon. I mean, Oregon or Penn State played Ohio State. They didn't get curb stomped. They were very much in that game.
Right. So I'm just saying their path is to get into the semis.
I'm trying to make it sound like Penn State ain't worthy over here, bro.
No, I mean, they are very much worthy. And by the way, here. So speaking of the path part, if say Georgia or Notre Dame, by the way, either one, you're going to get four of the top like five ranked teams in the semis.
Yeah, because
Ohio State was what, sixth?
I mean, eight
in terms of the actual.
I thought they were eight.
That's their seed. That's their seed.
Oh,
their
ranking. Oh, that's right. It's stupid seeding versus ranking. Yes.
Right. In terms of rank, you're going to get like four of the five top ranked teams in the semis. So it's kind of going to work itself out. But the way it got there, I think, was definitely not the case.
I found myself cheering for Ashton Jeanty and feeling really bad for him because I literally was like, dude, where do you want him to go? And late in the game, you could tell, man, he was almost defeated. Like, this sucks. I got to keep doing this, but there's nowhere to run the football. And I think you're right about that. They threw it to him early, but they didn't throw it to him again. I'd have given him more touches and space because that dude, his balance and playmaking, and he just pops out of piles sometimes. You're like, what? Like, how did you get there?
And
Scataboo proved that too, man. Scataboo.
Both of them.
Freaking man child. I mean, he's
Scataboo had the statistics. Too, Jeanty didn't necessarily have the statistics, but if you watch that game and think that Jeanty is not an absolutely phenomenal running back, you're crazy. You're utterly insane because his ability is next level.
But I'm also not going to knock you. I'm not saying this to be clear, but I'm not going to knock you if you watch that game and say Scataboo's a better player because Texas is the best defense that we've seen in the country. Me and you have both said that repeatedly. Scataboo, passing, rushing, receiving, like at one point he had more than Texas in total yards. He did it a little bit of everything. I mean, that was he was the offensive
wore them down,
player
and game. He wore them down.
Like, he was the MVP offensive player of the game, by the way. Like, and they lost. Like, that's how good he was. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No.
I was just, one thing that's interesting when you watch Jeanty and both Scataboo, as you step up in sort of level of competition, the DBs can tackle you. That's the difference watching the games is when the Penn State had the extra hat in the box and it's a corner or a safety, they can bring you down versus some of the teams that they play against a lot of times just don't have a shot at bringing them down.
Yeah, but see, yes and no. The problem is they don't get to that second level without somebody grabbing a hold of them first. Like on the draw play when it was 3rd and 21 that you talked about, he got one-on-one in the safety and made him look stupid. Like, but you're not afforded those opportunities to get through first level without having to bounce it and make that angle clearly defined. You felt horrible for him, but man, he was close to breaking Barry's record at the end of the game. You could tell they were giving him carries when the game was out of hand to try to get him to that record. But again, Barry did that in 11 games. So
Scataboo, by the way, elite drip with the basically thigh pad only, girdle only look.
About to say, when you have quads like that, I think you're just like, screw pads. I don't need pads. These are built-in pads.
Ultimate like rugby player that you'd want to, like, first off the bus rugby player you wouldn't want to mess with. All right, did you watch any other bowl games on New Year's Eve? Because there were a lot of other good ones.
You got to start with Bielema. I mean, you got to start with Bielema and Beamer. And Brent, I've said this all year, so everybody who's been listening all year, you either like this or hate it, but I absolutely love the pettiness of college football. I'm here for it. I love it. It's your job to shut it up. It's your job to take it. But, like, I think kids feed off of it. I think it's fun. But the ultimate, like, first of all, if you watch the game, and I'm talking about, you know, this Cheez-It Citrus Bowl, there was a lot of cat and mouse. There was a lot of every time if you watched it, the substitution thing was real. Like, that was purposeful. Bielema and company, like, drug out their substitutions when South Carolina substituted and it was remotely middle of the clock, late in the clock. Like, they would send one guy, two guys, three guys in different waves. That's illegal. It's against the spirit of the rule. You're supposed to all sub at one time. It's not like, oh, one guy come, okay, the next guy come, okay, the next guy come, because that would take the whole play clock every single time. So they definitely were prodding Beamer and using that to their advantage, which it wasn't getting called. So why would you not? Right. Used it to its advantage. And then obviously the late in the game, Illinois guy goes down. Bielema walks over to on their sideline to USC. And I've known Bielema for years, by the way. He's got an awesome personality. And this is absolutely him. Like, he's a poker. He's a prodder, and he is fantastic. And I love it. Like,
so similar. So you guys are kind of like,
we're in the same spirits. 100% Love it. Here for it. He walks over there and he goes like this, you know, sticks his hands out. USC had done that on a kick return, and obviously it rubbed him the wrong way. And then Beamer was already chafed, and then Beamer comes on the field, and there's just madness, Brent. It was fantastic.
It was, and then the post game handshake was. By the way, credit to Illinois winning the game. 10 wins.
Yes,
like, you have South Carolina go down that everybody was arguing for as a playoff spot. Bama obviously went down. We'll talk about that here in a second. But 10 win season for the Illini, and Bielema talking after the game, like, hey, look, this is just the starting point. We want to show that we want to be a college football playoff team next year, which, by the way, after the very anticlimactic, soft, you know, bro hug handshake after the game. I was kind of hoping for more interesting, but fireworks. Of course there weren't any. But hey, somebody did get married. I saw a couple got married at the Cheez-It Bowl.
I ain't doing that crap, but I got you. But here's the thing, Brent. Okay, so the size equivalency of Shane Beamer and Brent Bielema might be similar to me and you. Are you poking that bear when you walk out there? Okay. I mean, Shane's yappy and he's got a mouth, and I love Shane Beamer. Like, I like his energy and his attitude and stuff like that, but
he understands math.
I don't think he wants that smoke. Like, Bielema is an O lineman. He's a DB. If those go one-on-one, those don't end well. You put your hands on an O lineman, you go down like really, really hard and really fast. But yeah, great season for Illinois. And you talked about Alabama. You talked about South Carolina. Like, we just talked about South Carolina. Those teams on the outside that were making some noise, and the fan bases were making some noise about Indiana, about SMU. You didn't take care of your business either. So, like, I think that's a fair point to bring up. Like, Illinois is a team that I saw Bielema on the campaign, just like Lane Kiffin was on the campaign. Like, hey, we're kind of in that mix too. We're right there with you guys. And, you know, people kind of laughed at him, but I think he went out and proved his point that they were right there. And all those teams that were clustered, you know, 13 to 20 that were complaining about didn't have a lot of difference.
Didn't play their best receiver either. Bryant, I think, was didn't play with getting ready for the NFL. All right. So if I told you that Michigan would beat Ohio State, Alabama, and USC in the same season, you'd say they actually had a pretty good season, I think.
Instead of 7 wins, or did they get to 8?
They got to 8.
What a turnaround for Michigan. I mean, kudos to them. They did. They looked dead. I mean, they couldn't play, tried 3 quarterbacks. I mean, dealt with so many injuries, and their best corner, obviously, Will Johnson being out, you know, most of the season. But they did. They found a way to rally, and not only did they beat Alabama in the playoffs, this is twice in a calendar year that Blue beat up on Alabama. One time was obviously a lot bigger deal, but how about the way this game started? Like, I thought Alabama players were playing on ice for a little bit. Like, they were, like, slipping all over the place. I mean, it was falling left and right, and the footing, and their jerseys, you know, some of the jerseys covered in mud, and the weather was sloppy, and they turned the football over, three or four possessions, and basically gift Michigan a 16-0 lead.
That's amazing. And by the way, Michigan with those 3 wins, Ohio State, Bama, and USC, 169 total passing yards combined in those
three wins. In all 3 games?
Total.
Okay, that would have been the more astonishing stat. That would be less likely than them beating all 3. Like, I would have said that's you're full of crap, but geez, Mania, how about that? Golly.
Unbelievable. By the way, there was also a great day on the hardwood. West Virginia won at Kansas for the first time ever in college basketball, but that's neither here nor there. We're not here to talk about that. Who cares? All right, let's spin it forward. Hey, I care. Let's spin it forward. You've got Texas basically now playing a home game in Dallas.
That is interesting.
Cotton Bowl against Ohio State. Early thoughts.
Hold on. I want to do this real quick. We'll get back to this question.
Okay.
I want to answer this right here. Alabama is starting to feel the effects of NIL in the transfer portal era. Alabama's felt the effects of losing Nick Saban. Like, Nick Saban didn't lose to bad teams. When did Nick Saban lose to bad teams? You lost to Vanderbilt, Oklahoma, and Michigan was a pretty good team. So, like, okay, say call those teams good teams, mediocre teams. Nick didn't do that, man. Like, those are average teams. Nick took care of business against average teams. So I don't think it's – and I think everybody's feeling NIL. I think everybody's feeling transfer portal. Like, that's a part of the process. But if we're going on facts, like, that wasn't something that Nick struggled with. Nick might have lost some big games and lost to Clemson a couple times and lost to Ohio State and lost to Georgia, like some upper echelon teams. But he didn't put too many stinkers out there against teams that weren't really good that had, you know, great rosters. So – I wanted to get that from the chat real quick.
That was one I got right in terms of saying
that
Bama was more likely to have lost team than go undefeated. So, and end up with 4. All right. So, the previous question, Texas, Ohio State in Texas.
Is there a spread out?
I mean,
do your thing.
I'll look. Yes.
I want you to look at that because obviously Ohio State more than proved they're the best team in the country, more than proved they're the favorite, the prohibited favorite the rest of the way. I don't know what the betting odds are going to be, but it's considered a home game for Texas because of where it's at. So that's 3 points usually for Texas. I'll still give Ohio State 7.5.
The one who I normally always tweets this stuff, so I went to him first, Brett McMurphy, for I think the – what's he write for? Action Something. Network.
Who cares? Yeah.
He does college football. Projected point spread via somebody. Texas -2. Texas is a 2-point favorite.
No way. Absolutely not.
Think a lot of money goes on the Buckeyes instantly there?
I mean, dude, I've seen enough to say. Now Texas's defense and the physicality up front, the vision in the back end, the way they can play zone and they don't have to play a bunch of man and maybe solve some of those problems. But I'm also watching Texas against Clemson, and we've said this. Texas has had the best, you know, defense in the country. I'm watching them against Clemson give up big plays. I'm watching them against Arizona State give up some pretty big plays. They've dealt with a little bit of injuries now too, you know, obviously on the offensive line and at cornerback today. I'm not seeing that. I'm just telling you that from what I've seen from Ohio State so far, how the heck are you picking against Ohio State? Like the rest of the way.
You can't.
I'm not.
I agree. You can't.
Home game helps.
Until you see otherwise.
Texas. Yeah.
I agree. Ohio State's defense, I think, will keep them down.
Yeah. Well, there's somebody in the chat. There's Cody in the chat that's got
Okay, there we go. So
FanDuel had Ohio State -6.5.
Yeah. ESPN, by the way, on their little thing here has Ohio State -5. I think that's probably more where it should be. Okay. So Brett McMurphy needs to check his sources on that.
Yeah, don't ever use that again. I won't
use that one again.
I went 7.5. So
you're pretty close.
You know, that accounts, you know, again, that's going to be a home field advantage game for Texas. But Ohio State, just how crazy, how big is the turnaround been from regular season to now? Just understanding exactly what they have up front, you know, game planning to who they are, to what they are. You know, the ground game instantly, Travion Henderson makes a big play because you've got to allocate so many resources to the perimeter when they're stretching you out wide and throwing the dink and dunk and throwing the deep balls. Like, that's who they are. That's who they need to be the rest of the way. They're going to be 70-30. And Will Howard, you're right, like, heater. I mean, that dude, like the Ibuka catch again, that was a great catch one-handed. Like, these aren't throws that are like, the second Jeremiah Smith touchdown was wide open, but for the most part, the other ones, dude, those are great elite throws. I mean, you give him time, he is really, really good outside the numbers. But interesting. So
in the two playoff games, by the way, he's right at a tick under 80% completion, right around 75% completion, 630 yards, 5 TDs, 1 pick.
And he played Tennessee, who was one of the best defenses in the country, and Oregon was one of the better defenses in the country. Like, these weren't booger eaters. Like, you want to give me the teams that didn't deserve to be there, like a lot of complained about Indiana and SMU. That wasn't them. They weren't playing them. Like, they've ate people alive. I mean, I don't, you know, Texas is going to have their hands full. I look at the run game for Texas, you know, can they get that going? The big plays, But the injury to right tackle, their right tackle warmed up, didn't play. So you got to imagine he might be close to coming back next time.
Right. And then he was Banks, an emergency guy this game.
Yeah, Banks, the left tackle, gets hurt again. You could tell, tweaks the ankle. He's not the same player. He's a top 15, top 20 pick. He's not the same guy either. And then cornerback goes down. Like, they've had a lot of injuries. They would have had their starting safety out for targeting too, if we called targeting, like when we're supposed to call targeting. That would have been another loss for halftime.
That's a great point. I didn't even think about it. He would have been out that first half of this game. All right, so maybe last thing would be, what does tomorrow's game, Georgia Notre Dame, which, by the way, is all these guys, you can't, like, what they're going through, like, totally different world. What's the actual game come down to? One or two things.
I mean, the easiest thing to point to is, what is Gunnar Stockton? I mean, do I love his juice? Yes. Do I love who he is as a person? Yes. Do I love that he drives a 1980 something Ford instead of a Lamborghini? Yes. Can he make plays for you in the passing game? And he can run. And here's the two things for me offensively: how much can he run the football, and you get from that, and how many deep shots does he hit? Because I think he's got a chance to be better deep than Carson Beck did. Like, those are two things he can do differently and better possibly than Carson Beck. Those things on offense, to me, will tell the story for Georgia.
Yep. Mine would be explosives in the running game for Notre Dame. If Georgia limits the explosives in the running game and makes them have 10 play drives, 10 plus play drives, I don't think they're going to have enough or be able to sustain offense enough to get into the 20s.
Yeah.
So I think it's first one to 20.
Yeah, and dude, for me, the Notre Dame thing is fascinating, because we've had so much talk about, you know, them, and I think once they lost to NIU, it didn't matter. Like, everybody was going to hate, and then obviously the Notre Dame factor comes into it. But you look at the run game and the explosive run plays, man. Like, they are elite. And I'm just telling you, number four, Love, like, I can't wait to watch him against Georgia, because I know Georgia's great up front. Like, I know how good they are. And I've said it, they got three top 20 picks at the very worst on defense. And maybe more in the future down the road with some of these guys, but that's this year, this year's draft. And I just think that dude's special, man. I think he's got juice. I think he's got patience. I think they'll run it several different ways, but I definitely think you're right. That will, can you limit that ground game and then the Notre Dame QB run game? Like, how much of that comes into play too? And the perimeter for Georgia, man, the perimeter for Georgia, perimeter run game has been an issue this year with in the QB run game. That's been a couple things they've struggled with.
In the start, like we just pointed out, how all these teams that have played the previous week come out. Now, granted, some of it's opponent, but also it's they are coming out more crisp early in these games. Georgia's the one that hasn't played. Notre Dame has played. Georgia, by the way, in terms of starts this year, how many games did they not have an offensive touchdown in the first, or you know, have very few points in the first half?
Yeah.
That could be, you're playing catch up and Gunner's got to play from behind. That's not a good recipe for Georgia. They need to play well early.
So do we think Arizona State and Boise State justified themselves? Like, did they show up good enough for you to say, like, I'm going to give them a spot in the future? Or did you think they were – like, Arizona State, they had to have proven it, right? Like, they proved that's pretty obvious. But what about Boise State?
I still don't think they should have got a bye, but that's neither here. I mean, that's
– What about Boise? Did you think they – did they show you enough to think that they deserve to be in the playoffs?
Yes, but not a bye. Definitely not a bye. And they were just the physical difference. The physicality difference between them and Penn State was stark.
Yeah.
Like, very stark.
And then we'll leave you with this, guys. If you've been watching the playoffs, and listen, I know some of y'all are Buckeye haters, and that's okay. You can choose to be that way. The Buckeyes are the best team in the nation, dude. Like, they have looked really ridiculous the last couple of playoff games, and they're the hottest team and they're the favorite. They just beat the favorite in Oregon that played the best all season. They look really, really good. We'll be here tomorrow night to break down Georgia and Notre Dame. Obviously one of these two teams are going to play Penn State for the right to play the winner of Ohio State and Texas. And the first 12 team playoff, man, we've finally got a great game. Thank you, Arizona State. Thank you, Kenny Dillingham. Thank you, Scataboo. Scataboo toting rock, throwing rock, catching rock, doing everything you needed to do, man.
So impressive.
We'll be back tomorrow night to catch you guys up, and should be a great matchup. See you, dudes.